agenda, we're going to have the presentation by the mayors. That's going to be followed by the two resolutions for annexation. And we are at a very, very strict time schedule today. And at 2 o'clock, we're going to be on teleconference in relation to the annexation of the North Star Borough. And we're going to take testimony then for 20 minutes on that, allow 10 minutes for committee action. Then at 2:30, we're going to move into the annexation on the Kodiak Island Borough, take 20 minutes of testimony and 10 minutes of committee action, so that today we have to be through by 3 o'clock because of the summit meeting at that time. So in order to allow the mayors to have sufficient time, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, we now have a quorum and we can recognize Mayor Williams. Mayor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Take this opportunity to thank all of the members of both committees that are attending today. The mayors, the Conference of Mayors of Alaska, very much appreciate your time on our behalf. Let me say at the onset that the mayors have taken a tremendous amount of time to study this issue. We've been working at it for about 3 months now. And while we recognize very much so the fact that the state of the finances for the state of Alaska is somewhat chaotic at this
Mayor,
point.
Mayor, if I can interrupt for just 1 second, too, I want to acknowledge co-chair Senator Ewing from the Senate is also with us today.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate Senator Ewing's time as well. While we recognize that there is a very chaotic situation within the state government right now as far as revenues are concerned, we also feel that it is worthwhile in mentioning that this cannot cause the demise of local government and municipal government because, of course, they're the basis for government within the state. And to those ends, what we've worked on is a package of revenue enhancements with some expenditures, and I have placed before you a copy of our letter of concurrence that I'll go through with you now, and then perhaps we'll have a few minutes for some questions and answer periods. This memorandum is to each of you on both this House and Senate Finance Committees. Once again, thank you for your time. The Alaska Conference of Mayors is pleased to offer for your consideration the following programs that we will hope will help to enhance revenue to the state, create a more stable situation within the government in future years, and help to promote a balanced budget within the very near future. In addition, some programs will help develop infrastructure and ensure quality education for generations to come. The results presented comprise the efforts of the mayors over the last 3 months as they have studied the issues and are the result of a statewide survey conducted during the last 21 days. Sources of information were obtained from the Office of the Governor, members of the legislature and their staff, departments of Revenue, Labor, and Commerce, and we wish to thank all of those who responded with time, information, and assistance in helping to complete this work. Included in our response is a compilation of the data and results of the survey. I'm sorry to say that it will be with you. I didn't, for some reason, they're not here at this point. But this compilation of data and the results of our survey that was taken. The Alaska Conference of Mayors, during their regularly scheduled meeting, February 23rd, 1989, concurred in the findings and have declared it to be their official position regarding the issue. The issues, as you will see, number one, we recommend that a management audit should be performed to indicate the appropriateness of state services and the most effective method of delivering them. We feel that there is a broad area within the state that probably could be looked at as far as its effectiveness in government. Number two, modify the economic limit factor according to House Bill number 118, now before the first session of the 16th legislature. Number three, reinstate the state income tax, allowing for maximum capture of revenue from non-resident employees working within the state. Number four, increase the motor fuels tax from 8 cents to 16 cents a gallon with appropriate rebates for boating and off-road fuel use as recommended by the Governor's Task Force on Transportation Facilities. In the education area, we have two items. The short-term education short-term item would be to reinstate the school tax at a rate of $50 per year for every Alaska wage earner. In the long term, we support the governor's proposal to identify a portion of the surplus earnings of the permanent fund to establish an account within the permanent fund which would totally fund the school funding formula. And of course, this would require placement on the ballot. Number six, use a portion of the surplus earnings account for the permanent fund to establish a revolving loan fund with guaranteed payback provisions for capital projects that benefit local governments and which will have a long-term economic development component. Local governments shall assist in having and have maximum input when establishing this program criteria. This item number six perhaps could be worked in with the municipal bond bank program. We're not sure just how it could be created, but we're sure there's a way that it could be worked in. We've all been concerned with the rail belt issue. It appears that the Rail Belt Energy Fund is a major pool of money that could be used for projects, but those in the rail belt are concerned about the intertie systems and energy-related programs. And so therefore, number seven, we request that we maintain the Rail Belt Energy Fund for use in the rail belt area with priority given to energy-related projects. We've tried to give a balance of both revenue enhancement and expenditures here. And finally, in making these revenue enhancement recommendations, the Alaska Conference of Mayors requests that the governor and the legislature recognize the importance of municipalities to the health of the state and the disproportionate cuts to state aid to municipalities since FY 1986. The governor and the legislature should address the budget imbalance this year with an appropriate combination of fair cuts and revenue measures. And we believe that these issues, while not the remedies to the whole problem that the state faces, will definitely help to correct some of the problems that we are now faced with. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your time in receiving this, and I would like to ask if we could spend a few minutes in open conversation with you.
Yes, I'll make a couple of comments, and then I'm going to ask also the committee members to do likewise. We are working with our summit, we are working with our fiscal policy committee, and we are working through the House Finance Committee, and we are working with the co-chairs in the Senate in order to look at reductions in the budget. And as you know, we are looking in the neighborhood of $150 million to $200 million, with approximately half of those coming out of the agencies and half coming out of the pass-through grants. Now, those are pass-through grants to individuals. Those are pass-through grants to municipalities, and those are pass-through grants to nonprofits, both the nonprofits that do service on behalf of the state and the grants to nonprofits like grants to state fairs and so forth. So in other words, we are looking at exactly what you're suggesting there. In relation to your number one, the management audit in the state and the agencies, you know, for 10, 12 years I served on the municipal level, and I thought the state surely should be audited. Now for the last 6, 8 years I've served on the state level, and I think the municipality should be audited. So so maybe we have something there. But with that, Co-Chairman Hoffman.
Yes, I do have over 10 years in local government and appreciate all the work that the mayors have done to bring these recommendations to the state. But I have, I've been informing many of my colleagues that when we're looking at areas to cut, we should also look at ways to assist local governments in generating revenue that could be most beneficial to all the communities in the state of Alaska. And one that I thought that should be considered is a municipal income tax, and I wonder if you know, maybe not a comment from you today on that issue, but I wonder what the mayors would think of such a concept if it was considered by the state of Alaska to allow local governments the ability to levy a municipal income tax.
I might respond by saying that a great number of the smaller communities now do have sales tax, which is somewhat akin to municipal income tax. Speaking specifically to Kenai, we have a 5% income or 5% sales tax, 3% of which goes to the city and 2% to the borough. We raise about $1,600,000 a year there. I don't know how the rest of the communities would feel about it, but I think that in the continuation of our sales tax, we pretty well cover our revenue source there.
Well, I bring this up, I guess, Mr. Chairman, because I think that sales tax is a real regressive tax that does not relate to generating income depending on the amount of income individuals make. And I think that the two concepts are considerably different in the way that they would be that way that they would affect communities. And I think that the amount that a community can generate on an income tax basis would be much greater than on a sales tax basis.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hoffman. What I'll do is include that as an agenda item at our next meeting, and we'll get a consensus of opinion.
Mayor Helms was...
Initially, the thought that comes to mind is that our membership is about 80 strong, 80 municipalities in the Conference of Mayors, and at least 80 collection agencies, whereas if the state did an income tax, that would be one collection agency. We would cover statewide rather than just municipalities, which would be more.
What I'm proposing is a municipal income tax that the municipalities could levy on the people, and they could keep those revenues to provide services.
Yes, I understand. I'm just thinking that real revenue, you'd have all that administration, all these collection agencies in the state, it would be cheaper.
We don't have anyone employed in Mansfield Borough, so the income tax wouldn't help us. Mayor? Please.
I have heartburn with that. One thing, people that are on Red Dog and work in Red Dog that don't live in the region, how would you do it?
Well, there would be ways, I guess, to, you know, there's problems on who would be who would be taxed, and one concept was where they work is where they would be taxed. So those people that come in from outside of the area would come in, and if they're working in the borough, and seasonally, they would be taxed when they leave. They would leave that revenue for the borough to use as they saw fit.
Yes, we had Representative Barnes, Senator Hewling, and Representative Brown.
And Phillips.
And Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Mayor, I have viewed your recommendations with, I guess one might say, somewhat sadness and in another way, amusement. I have always been a big supporter of municipalities and believing that government closest to the people tends to be the best government. And in that regard, I have always supported municipal assistance and revenue sharing to the maximum extent possible. But it seems to me that with the proposals that you put forth before this legislature, that what in fact you're offering to do is to allow us to do what in many communities the people in those communities will not allow you to do, and that is to tax them further. And I resent the passing of the buck, if you please. I think you have as much responsibility to raise taxes at the local level through whatever means, that you can raise it as long as the people you represent will go along with that, as we do. The people that I represent have spoken very loudly that they're not interested in any new tax, but yet that's what you ask us to do, to continue to fund municipalities. And when there was discussion around here that municipal assistance and revenue sharing should be cut, I, for one, said I would not vote for any cuts to municipal assistance and revenue sharing, because that's simply passing the burden along to municipalities. But with recommendations like these before us, I'm afraid I may be inclined to change my mind.
I respect your view very, very much, Representative Barnes, and I think part of what has brought the mayors to this point of concern is our understanding that municipal assistance and revenue sharing is standing in line for a major cut this year. And I would again refer back to our last statement where we say that we feel that the governor and the legislature should address the budget imbalance this year with an appropriate combination of fair cuts and revenue measures.
I'm going to have to cut in here because we only have a few more minutes and we had three more questions. Senator Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I certainly appreciate the members of the House Finance Committee allowing me to sit in on the meeting, and I want to thank the mayors for the hard work that they've certainly done in the last couple weeks in coming up with some, at least some, a list of things that we can start looking at. Obviously, I have a problem on 2, 3, and 4 at this point on the tax question. And I've been working with the Governor's Summit Conference, and every time I go up there, I say, well, number one, on number three, reinstate the sale, state income tax, that there hasn't been a bill that's been introduced this session on that. The Governor's talking about introducing a bill next session, but I haven't seen any legislator put his name on the bill to this point. Obviously, I have been supportive of the Rail Belt Energy Fund. I'm glad that the mayors have all come together and worked on that issue and come up with some consensus on the issue on number 7. And I think some of the other things are going to need to be looked at very, very carefully. But I certainly, you know, appreciate your comments. It is going to be a very difficult year as far as reductions and that sort of thing. It's going to be very important that we look at everything carefully when we make any kind of decisions.
Thank you very much.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, and thank you, Mayor. I think your recommendations are very good and that they reflect an understanding of the state's situation and the fact that the state provides many services that affect the people we all represent. So I commend you for your work and your boldness in stepping out in favor of these unpopular ideas. With respect to number one, you mentioned in your opening remarks that there were some areas of government you felt needed attention. Can you be a little more specific, because it seems like the reality of getting an audit done in the short time frame available to us is low, and if you had any specific suggestions, we'd be very happy to hear them now.
I would probably have to defer mostly to the mayors on their own separate ideas about it. I do have a couple of my own. One, of course, would be the Department of Transportation. We believe that there should be an overall view and audit of the Department of Transportation's policies regarding personnel hiring and also their expenditures of funds. It is a major budget item within the state. I personally have viewed the operation of the state school systems with some concern, and education in general. If we look at the total dollar amount that the state spends on education, it comes to $766 million. And, of course, this is all debt service, pupil transportation, and all university combined. And that, coupled with local government's effort, places the bill for education at about $1 billion in the state, somewhere in that neighborhood. My personal concern, viewing education in the outlying school districts, I would say that there seems to be room for a cutting of the costs of education there. When you review the reports that show, for example, the Kenai Peninsula borough at 9 persons per 100 students, and some of the outlying areas in the 25 and 28 persons per 100 student category for operations. And we think those things should be looked at as well.
Sure. We're going to interrupt here. I personally am gratified to hear you finally starting to support us in some of these things. Representative Phillips?
Well, obviously I don't live in the right part of the state, but I'm just going to tell you what my constituency has to say about it. They only agree on one thing that you've, even then that's questionable. But I represent approximately 40,000 people, and basically what they're telling me, loud and clear, cut the budget, no taxes. Until that's done first, until the spending side is addressed first, don't talk about the revenue side. And I'm not making a political speech. Any of you mayors can come back home with me this Saturday, and you'll hear it. I'm just really, I guess I live in the wrong part of the state.
I really wish we had more time. What we have is those two municipal annexation questions, which, if they don't pass out of House Finance today, they're dead. So therefore, we have to take that up. But I encourage each and every mayor to make some contact with their local legislators, because I think this give and take back and forth, the more we understand about you and the more you folks understand about our situation, I think it's better for the people of Alaska. So we thank you very, very much for your report today, and we thank all the mayors who are here, and we look forward to meeting you individually here.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. One last comment from our side. We encourage you to continue the budget workshops that you've been producing. This is the one item, I think, that will bring to the people of the state of Alaska a greater understanding of budgetary problems within the government and really bring a point as to what can and cannot be cut. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and all the members of both committees.
Thank you. At this time, can we be on teleconference? Okay, at this time, we're going to move to House Joint Resolution 21 and House Joint Resolution 23. House Joint Resolution 21 is a resolution disapproving the Local Boundary Commission's recommendation for annexation of territory to the Fairbanks North Star Borough, and is sponsored by Representative Wallace. House Joint Resolution 23 is a resolution disapproving the Local Boundary Commission's recommendation for annexation of territory to the Kodiak Island Borough, and is sponsored by Representative Jocko. Local Boundary Commission's recommendations must be presented to the legislature and would become effective 45 days after the presentation or at the end of the session, whichever is earlier, unless disapproved by a resolution concurred in by the majority of the members of each House. Therefore, the deadline for action regarding HJR 21 and HJR 23 is March the 4th, 1989. So it is imperative that if the full House is going to have an opportunity to react to these two resolutions, that we move them out of the House Finance Committee today so that they can be scheduled on the calendar as soon as possible so that if passed, they would move on then to the Senate and give the Senate appropriate time for their action. So it's my intent today that we take 20 minutes now for public presentation on HJR 21, starting first with the sponsor, then take 5 to 10 minutes for the committee action if necessary, then we'll move into HJR 23 with the same time frame. And I assume that we are now on teleconference so that everyone can hear. And with that brief introduction, I'd like to recognize and represent the Wallace.
Thank you, Ms. Co-Chairman, and Mr. Chairman, you can represent me anytime. Co-Chairmen and members of the committee, I'd like to thank you for your prompt consideration of Resolution HJR 21 to disapprove the Local Boundary Commission recommendations for the Fairbanks North Star Borough annexation. It's appreciated. As you know, this issue is very important to my district as we seriously address the questions of self-government, the questions of self-government and how to make it work in such a large area as District 24 that's largely an economically disadvantaged area of the state.
Yeah, me too.
The Local Boundary Commission action this past year, after the session, we passed Legislative Resolve 52. I believe that the work of the Local Boundary Commission this past 6 months goes against the spirit of the action taken by the legislature last year in Legislative Resolve 52. You may recall that we requested the commission to, quote, take into full consideration the desire of residents of an area in the unorganized borough to be self-governing and to give them reasonable time to study the concept. The Fairbanks annexation process before the Local Boundary Commission took only about 4 months. In the rush, many factors were overlooked considering statewide impacts. For example, the possibility of a rural borough and the possibility of including Livengood in the 50-mile community in that borough. I believe a more detailed analysis of options and impacts is needed in order to comply with the spirit of the Legislative Resolve 52. It leads me to question, is the Local Boundary Commission above the legislature? How do these two processes fit in? And I think some of those questions are going to be answered Senator Zaroff's request before the Legislative Budget and Audit this after we met at noon, and he requested that the procedures and processes of the Local Boundary Commission be taken a look at. allowing a borough to annex land primarily to add to its tax base and removing the revenue from the state's income at this time without more consideration concerns me. The Anchorage Daily News said it well in their editorial of December 27th. Quote, the commission's decision failed to explain why Fairbanks needs the money more than other Alaskans, Alaskans who will pay the bill through lower state revenues. One of the major mandates to the local boundary commission is annexation, that annexation is possible, and it's possible through the desire to provide services. As you know, the state continues to have an educational service obligation in the Live and Good 50-mile community, which is right next, right on the line to the annexed area. That Live and Good school is within the Yukon Flats Regional School District. Expanding borough government should expand services to people. This annexation does not meet that test. It also concerns me that this decision was made without public comment from individuals and organizations in my district that will be affected by the annexation. The Yukon Flats School District REAA was not notified, nor was the City of Fort Yukon notified, nor were any other communities within my district notified. It seems to me that a decision of this importance should have and could have a lot more opportunity for public response. Ladies and gentlemen, all we're saying is that, look, this is something we're taking a look at. Give us time for it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. The order in which we will take testimony today, next we'll move to Mayor Helms, then Jonathan Solomon, then Priscilla DeLago, or Ken Wooten, and last then will be Mike Wallier, for the Ken and the Chiefs. Mayor Helm.
Thank you. Do I have to keep this pushed down?
Yes. And once again, we'd ask everyone if they could be as brief as possible so we can have time.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wallace. The Fairbanks North Star Borough proposed this annexation in response to several years ago having provided emergency medical services and response to the pump station area and being told by our attorneys that we could not provide those services outside our boundaries, which generated the discussion about annexation. When we looked at annexation, we looked at 360 degrees, but as far as Live and Good in those areas, we felt that if an annexation was going to take place there, that the populace should come to us and request additional services. The pump station has a socioeconomic tie with the Fairbanks North Star Borough. The information I have from an employee at the pump station is, in their knowledge, there's 16 to 20 children of workers at the pump station that presently are being educated in the Fairbanks North Star Borough schools. So we're providing services at this time, and I'm sure would be expected to provide services if anything happened in that area. I'd like to mention Mitch Dementev, the head of Tananaw Chiefs Conference, testified yesterday that their area, Tananaw Chiefs, has been looking at boroughs for 16 years now, and at this point still have not decided whether or not they were going to propose a borough. So at this point, a borough has not been proposed, although that was taken into consideration by the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. The Department of Community and Regional Affairs looked at the numbers and showed or proved that the taxable value in the remainder of the area would still support a borough, so this annexation would not be detrimental to that. There was no timely objection to our annexation, and I do want to point out that the public hearing before the Local Boundary Commission was held in Fairbanks during the Alaska Municipal League Conference. And it was on a Friday that the hearing was held. On Wednesday, it was announced before the entire body at the Alaska Municipal League. So as far as opportunity to testify, I think the opportunity on our annexation anyway far exceeded any other public hearing that's been held before the Local Boundary Commission. I would just urge you to make your decision based on the merits of this annexation and not any perceived fear about any future annexations that somebody in the state may be contemplating. Thank you.
Thank you. I also want to recognize Representative Boyer, who has joined us at the table, and a brief comment from Representative Kopanen and Phillips. Representative Kopanen?
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I have submitted two documents. One is my personal statement, and the other is a copy of the Juneau report for January 89, which should refute the consideration that Fairbanks has been undertaxing itself or has not been making a sufficient effort. In fact, in Mr. Bradner's terms, certainly has made a better effort than any other borough. And that, of course, is the oil industry speaking, that doesn't wish to be taxed any greater than it is at present. I did reside along the road over 35 years ago when I worked for the mining company. At that time, knew many of the people who then lived there. It was the entire road up to Livengood, including Livengood, which is not being considered at this point, was considered part of the Fairbanks Mining District, and the same people lived there. Many of them moved into the community. Subsequently, when I helped organize the Chena Goldstream Volunteer Fire Department, we responded wherever there was a need in regard to the requirement that the state provide highway emergency services. We had a small grant for that. We got money for an ambulance from, in fact, Standard Alaska Production Company, and we trained people and responded along that highway. We were ultimately, when we became a service district, we were not allowed by the insurance company to respond outside of the borough boundaries. And therefore, service ceased on the 10 miles, I like to stress the 10 miles between the current borough boundaries and the pump station. I have personal acquaintances who have worked for Alyeska, both there and other places, who point out that Alyeska will not, for similar reasons, permit their rescue people to leave company property, so that this is an unprotected area. If the borough boundary is extended, we will be extending the service to that area itself. So there is a service, there is a need. Those people who work at the pump station live there. The current borough boundaries on the northwest are an artificial delineation. At the time of the native land claims, when they asked the Han Kuchin people where their boundary was, they drew the lands right over that straight line that lies between the United States and Canada. We weren't able to do anything about that in the Native Land Claims settlement, and I'm glad to see the Yukon and Canadian government is finally catching up to that problem. But this kind of boundary in the northwest is artificial. I have included the maps that shows the small area. Frankly, I think we have failed to look at the requirements of drawing the boundary up to the National Recreation Area so that the drainage of the creeks is within the borough planning area. I think that small area is a mistake to leave it out. The borough does have policies including mining or industrial zoning that will protect the rights of the miners in that area, and therefore I think that the best plan is to vote against this. I'm sorry to oppose my good friend, but in this instance, I have to disagree.
Okay, Representative Phillips, I'm going to have to ask you to be real fast.
Yeah, real brief. Mr. Chairman, I'm curious. 60% of your budget deals with the schools, right?
That's the direct, that doesn't include the debt service.
Right, okay. And then on the front page, it says we support education with 60.9% of our budget. And the question I have is, of the local tax dollars generated, how much is that comparison to the rest of the borough's functions?
To the rest of our budget, it probably amounts to about 85% of the local tax dollars that we bring in.
Okay, so you're saying that for every $100 you spend on education, 85 cents or $85 is from the local tax base then?
Yes.
Yeah. In the Fairbanks North Star Borough?
Yes, the amount of local taxes that we bring in amounts to the cost of education, and I'm including debt service in that cost, amounts to about 85% of what we bring in local taxes.
Pretty good.
Thank you. At this time, I'll recognize Mr. Solomon. Thank you, Mayor. I do have to comment. I don't believe there's a municipality in the state, at least the last figures I have, that out of every dollar that's spent within a municipality, the state provides at least 65, 66 cents.
Dollars. That's why I'm questioning that, because...
Jonathan?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I want to thank you before I testify along the poor people of the rural area to speak through me to you on this issue. Because they weren't allowed or had funding to go to any other hearings held in urban country. First, I would like to state my name. My name is Jonathan Solomon. I'm a resident of Fort Yukon, Alaska. In the year that the Senate Bill 35 was passed, I was appointed that year to the State Operator School Board. To do that, I was appointed to that board to create local control, because it was our advocates to do that. And we did that year. And during the time that local control bill was in the Senate, Senate Bill 35, nobody testified against it. After it was passed in that fall, the IRAs were being set up and the boundary lines hearing were being held. The people of the North Star Borough, and some of them were legislatures, testified that they didn't want to move their boundary line to the people of the Live and Good area and the central area and the 101-mile on the Steese Highway and all the mining people up in that area, because there were senators and House of Representatives that had interest in that area and didn't want to be taxed. They testify against the boundary line being moved north of the White Mountain. We testified that we wanted our boundary line, the RA, Yukon Flats School District, to be the north of the White Mountains. But because of these testimonies that were being heard, and they were afforded the hearings, they were afforded the chance to include all the areas they're asking for now and more. At that time, they didn't want it because the pipeline was being built and they didn't need nobody else. They didn't need none of the other areas of the area they're asking for now for taxation purposes. I know a senator that owned a lodge on the Steeves Highway on 101, and he didn't want that to be taxed by the North Star Borough. And they testify that it should stay, that the RA boundary lines for the Yukon Flats should stay in the south of the White Mountains. And right now, we are not affording people to testify that has interest in that pump 7. Mentos is closer to that pump station than Fairbanks, both by air and by road. For future, we said, and somebody says it only involves one Yukon Flats school district. It doesn't. It includes Koyukon school district is included because they must have an interest because they are shorter distance to that point than any other than Fairbanks. Mr. Chairman, you know, when people are afforded all these things and they don't want it. Now that they didn't have it, now they want it, the people that have it now want to keep it, and they're not afforded to attend the hearings because the hearings are held here in Juneau and in Fairbanks, and they can't afford to go there. It costs our school district five times as much as any village school to run that school on the highway called Northern Life School. And there's only nine students and two full-time teachers there. If I should want to tax any property, then I should have the responsibility of affording service into the area of people that is there, not the pipeline. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Is there any question? I'll be willing to answer.
No, we're going to have to move on to Live and Good right now. Thank you. Could we hear from Ken Woodens from Live and Good, please? Your call.
Mr. Chairman, he's dropped off three times already. Apparently some problem with his radio phone.
Okay. Next, then, we would have Mike Wallier. Mike, we'll ask you to be 2 minutes.
I'd love to be brief. Mike Wallery, I'm an attorney with Tanana Chiefs Conference. There's been a lot of discussion. I only have a couple of points to make. One is that there are some significant problems with the LBC report, which found that there was no impact on a future borough in the region. That LBC's finding was based solely on a scenario of a Yukon Flats borough, which has pretty much been rejected as being only marginally feasible because of the way the tax cap operates and the population densities in the area. The TCC has expressed an interest in studying and putting to the people a vote as to whether or not to organize a borough within the region. That would, in fact, if that borough were formed, the tax cap would not affect that, and therefore the LBC finding is simply incorrect simply because they hadn't considered that particular option. In terms of the intent of TCC to proceed with that, we've entered into an agreement with the Department of Community and Regional Affairs to have a study completed by December 1 so that we will either file a petition with the Local Boundary Commission by December 1 to proceed with a borough or not. And that decision is going to be made by December 1 by TCC as to whether or not it's going to sponsor that petition. What we're asking for is basically the time to properly assess the situation, get the information to the people that are concerned by it, and proceed with a comprehensive and rational planning process. And hopefully, if we have until December, we'll be able to do that properly.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Is the gentleman from...
The bridge operator is trying to dial from one of the bridges.
Okay, do we have any committee comments while we're waiting to hear from the gentleman from Live and Good? Are we ready for a motion so we can start our discussion? That would be a motion to adopt HDR 21 and move from committee with individual recommendations.
Good. Do I have to be on this thing here? I have a question. Is okay? Can you? Yeah. Okay. You say that you're going to petition for this new borough, just about Fairbanks. I find this mad. This one right here, Yukon.
Let me get that.
We're going to interrupt just 1 second while we have Mr. Wooten, then we'll get back to your question. Mr. Wooten, can you hear me? Okay, will you go ahead and make your presentation, please? And I'm sorry that we do have to limit you to 2 minutes.
Squad in Live and Good. Medevac has come from Fort Wainwright. $1,000 school tax, the state income tax, and it was also noted that some 7 people who have children in Fairbanks schools are already paying taxes in the Fairbanks area, so they're already taken care of. And we also want to note that this North Star boundary has been moved twice within the last 4 or 5 years. It started out at 28 miles, and then was moved to 34 miles a couple of years ago, and now it is just inside a few feet of Pump 7 driveway. Do you have any questions?
No, but we thank you very much and give our regards to everyone there, if you would, please.
The sign may have been moved, but the boundary's been there ever since the borough was formed.
Okay, at this time, I'd like to recognize Chairman Hoffman for a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move HGR 21 with individual recommendations.
Okay, discussion? Representative Phillips, would you...
Well, I'm just curious about this proposed new borough that's, I guess, Yukon Koyukuk. Is that the name of it?
It's in interior region. Right. We're using the TCC.
And you're saying you're going to petition the local boundary commission sometime in December of this year for creation of a new borough?
In line with Resolution 52, we've made a commitment to the Department of Community and Regional Affairs that we will advise them by December 1 whether or not we will sponsor. And that's a commitment we've made.
Mr. Chairman, I may...
I'm waiting for a resolution on House Bill 1.
Yeah, well, Mr. Chairman, I may offer an amendment to the resolution for purposes of discussion.
Representative Boyd?
I have a question of Mr. Waller before he leaves.
Okay. Would you stay here, please? We've got Representative Boyd and Representative Kopanen, and we got 4 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question to Michael, then. Would it make sense in some larger scheme of things, then, that if, in fact, the Tanana Chiefs fails to move ahead on December 1st with that sponsorship, that we should have some kind of a drop-dead provision that would allow that the annexation take place at that point? I mean, does that make some sense to you?
Yes, it does.
Let's see.
Thank you, Representative Kopanen.
Yes, the question deals with the taxability of the property concerned. Are you looking at not the operating income, the question of being able to tax that property, but of issuing bonds against that property for construction? It seems to be the big question.
No, we're looking at a tax-based analysis. In other words, what we're concerned about is that by the Department of Community and Regional Affairs estimate, the tax base of a regional borough would be 87.5% dependent on the pipeline property valuations. Our estimates are closer to 98%, between 95 and 98%. So that while this annexation may not be significant relative to what Fairbanks' needs are, it's only $2 million to Fairbanks. It's a significant portion of any proposed borough in the interior.
But their original analysis was that you would not be able to tax that value, that it wouldn't make a difference to the limit that you were able to go.
No, that was a local boundary commission's determination based only on boundaries for the Yukon Flats. The local boundary commission did not look at a regional borough, and they made no determinations on that. Since that, the Department of Community and Regional Affairs has taken a look at it. Our understanding is they agree with us that a regional borough would not be affected by the tax base. I can give you the numbers.
What is TVC's TCC's position on the Delta borough, which is forming the same sort of little area and yet is very close sociologically, economically, et cetera, to the Toke area or the Gateway School District?
The only position we have in the Delta is that the village of Healy Lake has expressed a desire to not be included within that borough for socioeconomic reasons. And it seems to be agreeable with the people in Delta, and we hope that they are excluded from a Delta Greeley borough.
Okay, Representative Schultz?
Yes, I get a little concerned that we're talking now about my boroughization of Delta and Greeley and Toke and things.
It's all part of the same problem, Dick.
Okay. The thing is, I do want to speak up on this particular resolution. I do support it. Primarily, the reason I support it is that I do not believe that the Boundary Commission, the powers that they have that are constitutionally empowered with them at the present time, are appropriate for the 1989 needs. They may have been in 1959 when they were created, etc. But today, I believe they've outgrown that. And we need more stipulation. I believe that we're seeing more lawsuits being filed. Public is not allowed to have input. We need a constitutional change. Okay, and I just want to mention that I have introduced legislation along those lines to do exactly that, to put it to a vote of the people. And if, in fact, we're ever going to be forced into boroughization throughout the state of Alaska, we have got to stop these annexations. We have got to stop this land that is continually being gobbled up by the larger areas. Because if we are going to be forced into a borough, we are going to have the ability to be able to tax those things that the urban people are looking at to tax for themselves. So every piece of land that is taken by annexation is land that if we are forced into a borough, that is going to be taken away from us to be able to support our tax base. And some areas are richer than others, and some areas are poorer than others. I have heard no comment or discussion or anything else about any of this Delta and Tok joining forces on any kind of a borough. And I don't anticipate that ever happen.
Okay. We conclude discussion now. We promise that we would not allow this resolution or the next one to be filibustered to death. They must be moved from committee today if there are sufficient votes. So we're going to give the prime sponsor the last chance to say one word, and then we're going to call for the vote.
Okay, members, just one word, just wrapped up in a circle here. Just in following what the previous representative commented on, there is great concern with the local boundary commission because the commission has made a recommendation to the legislature that does not enjoy the full support of the commission. There are 5 members on that commission. 1 dropped off due to conflict of interest. The chairman of that commission that made this recommendation is from North Pole, which is in the North Star Borough. And that this recommendation to us was made on a parliamentary procedure. To my knowledge, there's never been an instance where the commission has submitted to the legislature a recommended boundary change to the legislature that has not been fully supported by a majority of the members. And my concern stems from a desire to avoid the establishment of what I view as an extremely poor precedent concerning the procedures of the commission. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, there have been several who have now indicated that they're on teleconference who wish to be heard. The only thing I can say is that we're very sorry. Please use the legislative information offices and send your message to members of the legislature as soon as possible on this subject. And with that, then, we would ask for the question to be called. Representative Phillips?
I'd like to offer an amendment if that's proper.
Okay, please do.
Okay, the very last.
Mr.
Chairman, I want to put something in effect. The very last line, at the word disapproved, delete the period and just put until January 1st, 1991. The rationale behind that is if this Koyukuk, Yukon, Koyukuk borough, proposed borough is serious, then they have a timeline to shoot for. And if it doesn't materialize, then by that time, the Fairbanks people should be able to annex that area. And that's at least the rationale behind it.
Discussion on the motion. Representative Schultz.
Yes, on the amendment. I'm opposed to that amendment, and the reason being, I do know that several areas are talking about boroughs, talking about the formation of boroughs, etc. TCC has got some ideas. I believe that it's going to create and stimulate a tremendous amount of controversy. I don't know whether Northway wants to be a part of it. I don't know whether Tok wants to be a part of that, Delta, so on and so forth. So, this whole thing on these annexations and things change. This borough thing is before the people in rural Alaska right now, and it's creating a tremendous amount of controversy, and I do not want to see any timeline set on this thing.
Okay. my comment, too, would be in opposition to the proposed amendment, although a year from this time I might feel differently unless we see some significant action. Question on the motion to amend.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative Kokanen?
Yes.
Representative Phillips?
Yes.
Representative Rieger?
No.
Representative Schultz?
No.
Representative Swackhammer?
No.
Representative Ulmer?
No.
Representative Wallace?
No.
Representative Barnes?
No.
Co-Chairman Larson?
No.
Co-Chairman Hoffman?
No.
Okay. Motion to amend fail. Now the question on the main motion to move House Joint Resolution Number 21 from committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying zero fiscal note.
Representative Kokanen?
No.
Representative Phillips?
Yes.
Representative Rieger?
Yes.
Representative Schultz?
Yes.
Representative Swackhammer?
Yes.
Representative Ulmer?
Yes.
Representative Wallace?
Yes.
Representative Barnes?
Yes.
Representative Brown?
Yes.
Co-Chairman Hoffman?
Yes.
Co-Chairman Larson?
Yes. Okay, please note then that House Joint Resolution Number 21 has passed from committee with individual recommendations. Next, then, we'd like to turn to HJR 23, a resolution disapproving the Local Boundary Commission's recommendation for annexation of territory to the Kodiak Island Borough. We would like testimony in the following order, if we could, please. First, the prime sponsor, Representative Jacko. Second, Representative Davison. And third, then, we will start moving around the teleconference network. Representative Jacko.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Appreciate your hearing this resolution today. I have a prepared statement here that I'll read to you, and then it's not too expensive, so. Recently, Local Boundary Commission approved the annexation of a large area on the Alaska Peninsula to the Kodiak Island Borough. Onshore territory consists of all those lands on the Alaska Peninsula which strain into the Shelikof Strait and or the Pacific Ocean extending from the Kenai Peninsula Borough on the north to 3 geographical miles south of Sutlick, Setimai, and Chirikoff Islands. The area contains no permanent residents and is in the jurisdiction of the Lake and Peninsula Regional Education Attendance Area. It is the resolve of HJR 23 to disapprove the annexation decision of LBC ruling in favor of the Kodiak Island Borough. It is my contention that the process and the reasoning behind the decision is flawed and incomplete. This is corroborated by the report and recommendations of the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, Municipal and Regional Assistance Division, dated November 1988, which states that the stated area be not annexed by KIB. Furthermore, Legislative Resolve 52 states that LBC is requested to take into full consideration the desires of the residents of the area in the unorganized borough to be self-governed and give them reasonable time to study the concept of self-government. Taking into mind that also during this time period, the Lake and Peninsula Borough had filed for incorporation also including the lands adjacent to the Shelikof Strait, it is impossible to see compliance with this legislative intent by the Local Boundary Commission. The time frame involved from the acceptance of the petition on October 14, 1988 to the LBC decision on December 4, 1988 spanned 7 weeks. The Lake and Peninsula Borough Incorporation proceedings took even less time. From November 10th to November 4th, all of 4 weeks. It is inconceivable that all factors relevant in applying all the standards to all the boundaries can be adequately weighed in those time frames. It was equally impossible for an opponent of a borough proposal to adequately respond in the time allowed. The petitioners may spend months or years preparing their proposal. An adequate response could require considerable time and effort. As you may very well know, the marshalling of facts and evidence and legal arguments can take considerably more time in the bush areas. The potential for revenue from municipal sales and use tax on commercial fishing in a contested area is relatively more significant to the proposed Lake and Peninsula Borough. Currently, the Kodiak Island Borough levies no sales tax. The Lake and Peninsula Borough will levy at 1% sales and use tax. The Department of Community and Regional Affairs has conservatively estimated the value of the annual harvest of salmon in the area to be $6 million. Since the Kodiak Island borough levies no sales tax, these fish offers no sales to the borough. However, a 1% sales and use tax, the Lake and Penn borough will garner $60,000 in revenue. The potential revenue represents 8.8% of total revenue of the Lake and Penn borough and only 1.2% of the Kodiak borough revenues. The area offers relatively little to either municipality in raw fish tax returns since the salmon are already being processed within the boundaries of the Kodiak Island borough. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has indicated that fish processing may occur on floating processors. There are no shore-based processors in the contested area. But it would be limited to bottom fish catcher processors. Any raw fish tax revenues from this activity would be relatively insignificant since the bottom fish stock have been extensively harvested and there are very little activities at this point. The Department of Community and Regional Affairs considers neither borough to be seriously damaged if the proposed area was to be left out of the respective boroughs, but considers the area to be more valuable to the Lake and Penn Borough than the KIB. Therefore, the department concludes that the Lake and Penn Borough argument is definitely more persuasive and meritorious than the KIB in this regard. Borough decisions are quite important and have long-range implications not fully understood by the local boundary commissions, it seems. This is particularly true in regards to land and resource management and local input, on which should be one of the major incentives for forming boroughs. Judging from our region's experience, the LBC process seems to result in short-sighted and arbitrary decisions. It is astounding that an agency would think that it can rationally make decisions redrawing the map of southwestern Alaska in a process taking less than 2 months. Furthermore, I remind you that the process and implications of borough formation is poorly understood by the public in Bristol Bay. This factor, along with the procedural impediments imposed by the LBC decision, the ability of the local people to have a meaningful voice in the process. Without understanding what is taking place and without a proper time frame to consider ramifications, a great deal of decisiveness has resulted. It seems that further review of the LBC's decision-making capabilities is in order, because of the current situation can only serve to harm the state in the long run.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Jackson. Representative Davison, please.
With the chairman's permission, may I use this map?
Sure, please do. Larry, maybe you can help the representative, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, co-chairman of the House Finance. My name is Representative Cliff Davidson. I represent represent District 27, which encompasses most of Kodiak Island as well as the area called the Chignik area. I just would like, before I begin my remarks, to tell you, show you perhaps what we're talking about here. And when I show you this, if you would please think in terms of water as a connecting geographic feature, it would be very helpful in me being able to get my remarks across to you. And when I say contiguous geographic feature, I'm talking about this type of thing here, from here to here. But less than a pencil thin mark here, the mountain tops here are only the areas that we're talking about here. It is this water area where Kodiak fishermen and Koniak fishermen before that have utilized the area for livelihood as well as fishing rights and fishing for personal use and other hunting and fishing activities. Again, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for this opportunity to present the Kodiak Island Borough's position on this very important matter. First, however, a couple of comments on the testimony from my friend from Pedro Bay. The important point to realize here is in that less than pencil thin area, there are no residents. And the matter of sales tax, please keep in mind that we are taxing primarily then fishermen who live in Kodiak. My remarks. You have before you a situation where the legislature is becoming involved in a local boundary dispute. Despite statements to the contrary, no statewide policy issues are at stake in the Kodiak Island Borough annexation. Only unhappy competitors for a land and water area that each believes should belong to them. The Lake and Peninsula Rural Education Attendance Area, REAA, was formed more than 10 years after the Kodiak Island Borough was incorporated. This annexation request by the Kodiak Island Borough takes in areas that were not included at the time of that incorporation. The REAA, on the other hand, includes areas that were left over after the Kodiak Island Borough and other boroughs formed around it. The REAA is not an inviolate entity which should never be subject to boundary change. Rather, it is an educational district whose sole purpose is to provide educational services to the people within its boundaries. There are, however, no residents in the contested area, therefore, no one in need of educational services. By placing this territory in the Kodiak Island Borough, the municipality in which it historically, culturally, geographically, and economically belongs, nothing is being taken from either the Lake and Peninsula REAA or the proposed Lake and Peninsula Borough. That is, nothing that is theirs inherently. In fact, until Kodiak Island Borough expressed an interest in the territory, it appears that the Lake and Peninsula REAA and its residents did nothing to protect this area on the local level. This committee is possibly unaware of the fact that the National Park Service proposed some development activities in the area that could have had serious negative impacts on the existing commercial fishery there. Did the school district officials of Lake and Peninsula REAA respond to this threat? Did the residents of the REAA respond? To my knowledge, they did not. However, I do know that the Kodiak Island Borough spent time and resources and staff resources as well to respond to the concerns expressed by the fishermen. And it was only after the Kodiak Island Borough annexation request was approved by the Local Boundary Commission that the National Park Service communicated with the Kodiak Island Borough on the issue. The biggest user groups fishing the waters in the contested area are fishermen from communities all over Kodiak Island, as well as outlying areas and other islands. Over the years, the Kodiak Island Borough has helped protect and enhance the economic vitality of the fishery. It has expended resources and staff time to assist state resource managers who are responsible for the area. We are talking about an area that is very important to the livelihoods of the fishermen who live within the Kodiak Island Borough. The contested area is a part of the Kodiak Salmon Fishing District. It is also identified as the Kodiak Management Area for herring and groundfish. The Kodiak Shellfish Area is even larger and represents the area originally petitioned for by the Kodiak Island Borough. It is interesting to note that over 75% of the Salmon District permit holders are residents of the Kodiak Island Borough. This is an increasing share of permits from 1975 to 1983. The only other issue I want to address at this time is the false issue of contiguous territory. If this were a real issue, then several other boroughs in the state should be dissolved. These include the Kenai Peninsula Borough, the boroughs of Southeast Alaska, as well as the Aleutians East Borough. We on Kodiak are a water people, and the Kodiak Island Borough is simply a collection of islands. More people travel from Kodiak Island to the waters in the contested area than people from Lake and Peninsula. They have a huge mountain range, those people from Lake and Peninsula, cutting them off more dramatically from the Shelikof Strait than cuts off the fishermen and pleasure boaters from Kodiak. The issue of contiguous territory, then, is not an issue, for the simple fact that an Attorney General's opinion has found that, and even encourages, that the Local Boundary Commission should view such situations as the Kodiak annexation request as contiguous. It is a problem convincing officials that are accustomed to dealing with land masses to think in terms of water being a geographic connecting feature. The fact is that the Kodiak fishermen that use the area, along with the Kodiak Department of Fish and Game, and to a large extent the federal government, which, by the way, owns all the land in the contested area, all consider the area one region. To summarize,
The decision by the Local Boundary Commission to allow the Kodiak Island Borough to expand its boundaries to include the federally owned land on the Alaska Peninsula directly across from Kodiak Island and connected by the waters of Shelikof Strait is a sound and good decision and one that should be upheld. I would be available for questions if there are any, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you. We're going to move into public testimony, and there may be some a little later here.
Thank you.
Okay, at this time, could we move to Chignik Bay and Mr. Frank Bassingham? Yes, you go ahead, please, and we'd ask you to, if you could hold your remarks down to a minute to minute and a half, we'd appreciate it very much. Thank you for your opinion. Next, could we move to King Salmon? We have Bobby Joe Kramer. Could we move to Kodiak and have Mayor Jerome Shelby, please?
I'll try to cut some of this testimony out that we've prepared for you and speed along here. Kodiak Island Borough today respectfully requests that House Joint Resolution 23 be killed in your committee today. Quite frankly, we're a little amazed that such a blatant attempt to raid the economic base of the Kodiak Island Borough, establish a state policy of taxation without representation, has gone quite this far. Local Boundary Commission considered this matter for many weeks. It took a great deal of testimony from Kodiak and the communities on the peninsula, who, by the way, were notified on May 6th of the Kodiak Island Borough intention to annex this area. The commission considered the small strip of federally owned national park and wildlife refuge land, which contains 63 salmon streams and many crab rich bays within the Kodiak fishing district, and made the decision that the area is, in fact, a critical part of the current economic base of the Kodiak Island Borough, and should therefore be a part of the Kodiak Island Borough. We're not talking about future activity here or future development. We are recognizing what is already existing part of Kodiak Island Borough's economic base. At this point, the Kodiak Island Borough petition, the Lincoln Peninsula petition, have no conflict. You're being given a lot of misinformation that clouds the issue. For example, we have received, and I'm sure you folks have it, within the last 10 days, a legal-sized base of lists where supposedly 14 reasons to overturn the petition. The petition we received within the last 10 days, a lawsuit over this issue. Again, the 14 or so bogus comments that were going to have very little substance to them, which we have previously refuted folks and totally to the Boundary Commission. All 28 reasons were presented and looked at by the Boundary Commission and refuted. There's no lack of clarity or confusion on this issue beyond that which the Lake and Peninsula folks are creating. They're simply creating false and confusing information very rapidly, trying to confuse people about what is involved here. The fact is there is no revenue at risk. So we agreed to move back the boundary to the Chicanik Fishing District. We virtually eliminated any of the revenue potential from taxation of land base in the area. It's all federally owned land. What is at risk is the potential proposed revenue that the Lake Peninsula Borough folks propose to take from the Kodiak fishing fleet. And folks, that's just simply taxation without representation. I could go through some of the points, but I won't, Mr. Chairman, today on some of those issues that they've identified as reasons they'll return. Just let me suffice it to say that we can respond and show that they're invalid statements. I would like to just comment briefly on one, and that's the comments that they're using that the DCRA staff recommended that this go to Lake Peninsula area. That simply is not true. What the staff did do is they recommended, they said it could go either way. Through three levels of staff, it was recommended that it go to Kodiak. The division director, one person, overruled her staff because she felt Lakes and Peninsula area might need the additional money from taxing the Kodiak fishing fleet. For that reason, the recommendation was written up suggesting it should go to the Lakes and Peninsula borough. Three staff members recommended Kodiak. One said Lakes and Peninsula. That's what really happened in the staff.
You have a half a minute. One half a minute, please.
Okay, I guess I'm a little concerned, Mr. Chairman, about not being able to present the information, but let me suffice it to say that the issue here is the taxation issue of the Kodiak fishing fleet. This is all in the Kodiak salmon fishing, or crab and shrimp, halibut, herring, pollock, cod fishing district. And basically what we're talking about is coming across the mountain range, taxing the Kodiak Island fishing fleet, and taking money back across the mountain range to do something on the other side of the ridge. And I think that's unconstitutional, it's unfair, there's no justice to it. And I would ask the committee to please pay attention to what the local Boundary Commission put a lot of work into, kill this bill today in your committee, so that we can get on about trying to address other bigger issues, such as protection of the entire fishing district from outside interests. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you, and I do apologize for having to shorten the time of testimony. I do note one thing, though, that the last two speakers, one we've been dictatorial and one we've been too democratic, so at this time, could we hear from Mr. Frank Hill, please? Frank, we're going to have to ask you to stay within the 2 minutes, please.
I'm speaking in support of House Joint Resolution
Resolution 23 was proposed to disapprove the annexation by Koyak Island Borough. I'm the superintendent of the Lincoln Peninsula School District. I'm the commissioner representative for the proposed Lincoln Peninsula Home Rule Borough. Lincoln Peninsula School District is an REA that has been providing educational services to 14 communities since 1976. One of our functions is to provide for the long-term stability of the educational program. Students and their parents should have the confidence that the special program will continue and develop as their needs for educational services grow. With that commitment in mind, the residents of the Lincoln Penn area began working to form a borough to help ensure the long-term financial and governmental stability of the area. Residents of the region will vote on incorporation of a borough on April 11th. Many people are concerned that this annexation by Koyak, if allowed, would seriously jeopardize the chances for successfully forming a borough. There's a great concern that the future borough could not be financially viable if Koyak annexation is allowed. Recently, I've been attending meetings in the district villages for the past week where we've been having discussions about the incorporation of the borough. Every meeting that we've had so far, we've had a considerable level of concern expressed of evidence about the impact of the Koyak annexation. Residents repeatedly state that it is their wish to have this annexation turned down. Parents and students of the Lincoln Peninsula REAA are alarmed that the state will dole out the entire resource base of the REAA and leave nothing on which to base future local funding for educational programs. Without a strong resource base, there would be nothing on which to plan for the long-term stability and development of school programs. So this cannot make plans for their growth and development either, since the unincorporated area's resource base is allowed to pass to other already viable government units. For these reasons, the committee and the legislature urge to disapprove the annexation by Koyak Island Borough by approving House Grant Resolution 23. Thank you.
Thank you. And at this time, we move to Sue Flenchberg. Sue?
Yes, I'm here. And there's two of us here to testify, so I'll try and go as quickly as I can.
Well, you each have 1 minute, then.
Susan Flenchberg, and I am testifying on behalf of the Bristol Coastal Resource Service Area Board, which is a locally elected board responsible for developing and implementing a coastal management program for the region, which includes the annexation area. There are a number of important reasons why the legislature should act to disapprove the Koyak Island Borough annexation. I'd just like to touch on a couple of these reasons. You're probably all familiar with the statutory and regulatory standards for borough incorporation and annexation. In addition to the more recent regulations governing competing petitions, what I'd like to just clarify a little bit is the LBC's justification is still how Koyak security standards and and the fact that it wasn't based on any kind of substantive analysis. The LBC's decision states that the annexation area is in need of economic development services which Koyak would be better able to provide. The LBC based their conclusion on Koyak's testimony that they would not be able to undertake any salmon enhancement projects on the Alaska Peninsula mainland if this area is not included part of the annexation territory. They also referenced the need for expanded waste disposal services from fish processors and another service that Koyak would be responsible for providing. The need for even the feasibility of undertaking SAM enhancement projects definitely needs to be put into perspective. Virtually the entire coastline of the annexation area is congressionally designated wilderness, Mr. Selby pointed out. And any kind of enhancement projects involving facilities such as hatcheries or habitat manipulation are really permitted in designated wilderness areas. According to the Flint Division of Fish and Game in Anchorage, the need for salmon enhancement and restoration projects is extremely limited and not even feasible since salmon spawn will already reach the fish in the intertidal areas. Given that over 9% of total salmon production harvested in the Koyak Fishing District occurs off Koyak Island, well outside of the annexation area, the likelihood of the borough sponsoring salmon enhancement projects along the mainland appears to be pretty doubtful. The need for solid waste disposal services also needs to occur in perspective. First, Koyak has not even indicated that they'd be willing to provide a waste disposal site on the Alaska Peninsula, which would not be possible given the protected status of federal land. Second, the city of Koyak and the Koyak Congo are already providing this service, and they should be, since virtually all salmon and herring caught along the Alaska Peninsula mainland are processed by shore-based canners in Koyak, for which the borough and the city receive a substantial amount of money in raw fish taxes. Although the number of offshore boats going constitutes the bottom fish in the Chillicothe Straits will fluctuate with the fish harvest, at least in the 1988 pollock season, approximately 89% of harvest was taken by shore-based canneries for which...
Sewer, sorry, we're going to have to ask you to summarize now, please, if you would.
Okay, just basically what I'm trying to say is that, you know, the OBC has standards that they must adhere to in making their decision, and that a lot of the justification used to support information provided by Kodiak doesn't meet those standards, particularly if you read through the lines and you get a hold of the different resource managers, which DJRA or the OBC never did. Mr. Selby's comments regarding taxation without reservation representation are not relevant to statutory standards. And if you do find that argument convincing, I think this will be under here in Dillingham. My husband and I...
Okay, Sue, we thank you very much, but we do have to move on. We have one more that signed up. We have a summit meeting that we do have to get to, and we do apologize for having to cut everyone short, but we want to make sure everyone at least has an opportunity to say something. So could we go to Mr. Bruce Baltzer, please, who's the last one, and we'll ask Bruce to please be short in his presentation.
Thank you.